that they did a mock takeover where they come in, you know, it's like, you know, we are Islam. You must bow down to Allah now or we will kill your pastor. And everyone's like, oh my God. Like,
no, go ahead. You're lying to me right now.
No, I'm not even kidding. I swear to God.
Oh my God.
And Allah. All of them, dude.
So he starts swearing all of them.
Yeah, so that was just like...
deep,
yeah. Yeah, dude. That was just like one thing. I remember like specifically like that. That was weird. And then they explained it to us afterwards, like, you know, you guys, this wasn't real.
Let's do that afterwards.
In case you were wondering.
The plastic swords didn't give it away.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good middle of the night. Thank you for taking the time to listen to another, hopefully insightful, podcast of God is an Elephant. Today we also have another two guests with us. Someone who, for me, has only continued to grow with love in my heart. My brother-in-law is here with us. For the years that I've known him, he's always continued to impress me with his perspective and creative thought on things. So I thought it would be a really wonderful idea to get him in here and share some of his views on things. He has brought his buddy, JP, in. JP is a musician himself, and he has... a lot of content out currently in the conspiracy rap realm, so we'll let him talk about that a little bit later, get into that. But we are glad that you're here with us. We hope that you enjoy our conversation. And without further ado, let's get started. Bob. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going.
Going good? All right.
It's late. This is a very impromptu episode.
Terribly planned. I was in the middle of a couple of beers and Kurt texted me, so I was like, it is time now. Let's get to the house. So, Kurt, thank you for doing this podcast with us.
Yeah, dude, thanks for having us.
Tell me a little bit about how, and I know a little bit because of Jenny and our previous conversations, but would you share with us a little bit about your upbringing in the spiritual community that you were and how that influenced you as you were growing up? Like, let's get a start, a base understanding of how you got to where you are today.
Pretty much grew up in a I'm trying to think of the best word for it because there's a lot of words that float around. I've described it to JP before and he was like, yeah dude, you were in a cult. And you know, so a lot of to a degree it's pretty much true, the stuff that, you know, like they were involved with. Okay, so have you guys ever heard of this movie called Jesus Camp?
I feel like I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Okay, so it's a documentary they made, maybe like 10, 15 years ago. I can't even remember at this point. But they made it, like, during the Bush administration. I remember that specifically.
Okay.
Because at the time...
Daddy, you know, Bush or Baby Bush?
Baby Bush.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so at the time, I remember that specifically because there was, like, you know, there was, like, that, like, big, like, anti-Islam, like, scare in the country. You know, there was a lot of, you know, that going on. A lot of politically charged... stuff having to do with, I mean, our churches were ridiculous. I mean, that's just, I'm just saying, we grew up in these politically charged churches that did some sketchy stuff.
I went to, not to interrupt your story, but I went to one of the churches that you grew up going to.
Morningstar?
Yes,
oh,
I went to
man.
Morningstar, and the pastor is the same.
Yep.
And I remember going, and the so at the time I was still very involved in the church, so the music... fantastic. Like, it was very, very good. I felt very moved. I felt like their heart was really in the right place. And then when the pastor came on that specific Sunday, he happened to start going off essentially about, like, people are going to call us racist, and that's fine. because I'd rather be called a racist than not be representing my lord well. Mm. And I was like, oh, I didn't know this was the kind of place I was in. I think I'm not coming back next Sunday. Yeah. But yeah, I've been there, so I did get to experience part of that, because they're still the same. And I know your mother was still recently involved with them again. So.
Yeah, she went back, and I mean, man, like, my dad actually, like, they're both crazy, you know, like, we're all crazy parents, you know, but my dad, he actually, like, he was just, like, he was not having that when she went back, you know. I don't blame him, honestly. It's a pretty weird church. So, the reason I brought up the Jesus Camp movie is because, just for context for that time period, one of the people in that movie, it's a documentary about these, like, politically charged churches during that time period that were, like, you know, anti-Islam, like, very politically, like, militant, like, let's get our kids, like, politically active, even though they're children, they don't understand the world around them to that degree, they're already, like, you know, brainwashing them, you know?
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that we're growing up into through these churches. So, man, I remember one time there was, I think they gave us some kind of disclaimer before it all happened, you know? But we were kids. We weren't really, we weren't thinking about what was about to happen, you know? But all of a sudden, they have these dudes stop the church service, like, barge in there with, and let me, like, go ahead and say, like, these, like, stupid stereotypical swords you would imagine, like, an old, like, Arab cartoon character holding,
oh,
you know?
Yeah. Arab Kirk Scimitar.
Yeah, yeah, he comes out there in that with his
Aladdin
robes.
Busted up in the church.
I know, yeah.
He's with Aladdin.
It wasn't even, like, it was almost, like, thinking about it now, it's kind of funny, like, their costumes were not on point. But yeah, they did a mock takeover where they come in, you know, it's like, you know, we are Islam, you must bow down to Allah now or we will kill your pastor. And everyone was like, oh my god, like,
no,
you're lying to me right now.
No, I'm not even kidding, I swear to God.
Oh my god.
And all of them, dude.
So he starts swearing all of that.
Yeah, so that was just, like,
deep, yo.
Yeah, dude, that was just, like, one thing I remember, like, specifically, like, that was weird. And then they explained it to us afterwards, like, you know, you guys, this wasn't real.
Let's do that afterwards.
In case you were wondering.
The plastic swords didn't give it away.
Yeah.
We're going to break them and stab
you. You can get these costumes on discount at Party City after we return them.
Yeah, so that was pretty ridiculous. But, I mean, it wasn't just our church. There was a lady in this movie, Jesus Camp, where they were, like, exposing all this stuff. There's, like, equally crazy things. In this movie, there's a group of kids who are, like, crying and, you know, praying, you know, feeling the spirit to a cardboard cutout stand-up of George W. Bush. I shit you not. Literally, and I'm watching this later as an adult thinking, man, that is, like, praying to an idol. Like, how are you, like, y'all
it's
are
like
serious?
It's like definition of praying to an idol.
Yeah.
I mean.
But so, like, that's kind of the, those were the kinds of churches we grew up in. Like, sometimes they were just nuts. But no matter what, like, that was just, like, an example there. Morningstar is ridiculous, but...
But you, to my understanding, you guys kind of jumped around quite a bit,
we
right?
We did, yeah. That we eventually decided that was, like, not a good church, you know? It took my parents a minute, but, like, yeah, we just jumped around to a lot of churches depending on, I think my mom's thing especially, was they were very into the ultra-spiritual part of Christianity. There's a lot of Christian churches out there that, they talk about the Bible, they get together, you know, they eat some food, and they go home, like, that's it, you know? And a lot of churches I've been to in the South, outside of, you know, my, like, just growing up and everything, that's what I've experienced, you know, with other people in their families, you know what I'm saying? But in our family, it's all about the spirit, you know? Like, my mom, full-on speaking in tongues, she'll be on the phone speaking to us.
I remember the stories.
Yeah.
Yes. The hand over the head.
Yep.
Oh man.
Yeah, she's for real, like, you know, she'd just be like, I'm not mocking or anything, but, like, you know, I've never heard anyone who does it, but, like, you know, if you haven't heard it, it sounds like gibberish, you know, like, just for lack of a better word, I'm not trying to offend anyone, but it's just if you've never heard it, you know, Google, like, look it up on, like, YouTube or something. And not a lot of people have, like, heard this in person, I guess, you know.
Sure.
It's supposed to be, like, an angelic language or something, is what they claim it as.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally God speaking through you, because God doesn't have a language or whatever. It comes out, like, they call it, like, you know, speaking in tongues.
What's part of the, like, what story or what section of the book? What section of the Bible is that from, or what is
Pentecost? Pentecost, where they're all the disciples are up in an upper room and they're praying, and the tongues of fire come down on them all, mm-hmm. and then they all start speaking. But even in that part of the Bible, it says that like they're all speaking in different languages, like everybody heard them in their own language, and so the whole speaking angelically gibberish kind of thing is. Even that's debatable, like argued between churches and stuff, because the Bible says it's like, oh, they were just speaking in other languages and stuff.
Not speaking in unknowable language. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
it's some of this stuff is hard though, because I've had people that I've spoken to have had really profound experiences where they legitimately will claim, no, this 100% happened. I was there. Like I've. You know, experience some sort of physical presence of, you know, God in that either ceremony or whatever was going on. Like, and some of it I can't really be a skeptic about, because one, I wasn't there, you know, but two, how can you argue something like that? And a lot of, I mean, you could easily just write it off and say, no. Like, that's just bullshit. But at the same time, how can I call it bullshit? You know?
Yeah.
There's plenty of stuff in this world that you can't understand. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's hard to debate that, too.
But then at the same time, you have the bullshitters and the ones who are not. You know, the people who fall into, like, acting a certain way because they feel like it makes them fit in, as opposed to, you know, those people who really feel filled with the Spirit.
There's phenomenons. I think it's crowd consciousness or crowd, where you get a bunch of people, and they'll start acting a certain way, and then you just get sucked into it.
Is that a group
like,
thing?
Like mom,
it might be like groupthink. Yeah.
Oh, mob mentality.
Mob mentality.
Yeah.
You just get sucked into it.
So like, there's people.
Some people end up like beating up on all the other people in public just because.
Yeah.
I think you see a spur of that with I want to say shootings in Charlotte. Like that's kind of related to that. Mm-hmm. You know that end, which is.
Yeah.
You know.
But I mean, you know, like, so to not make it so negative, because like.
Oh, obviously not.
Yeah, but so like then they can have these, you know, these. Ministries or these, you know, like sermons or whatever, where people at the end of it are all raising their hands and they're all jumping and falling out in the spirit
yeah.
and mm-hmm. crying and all these different things. And it's like, just because it's, you know, it might be this group thing, crowd thing, whatever you want to call it, that's just everybody's getting sucked into it. But it doesn't mean that it's not something that's not happening to them, you know?
Well, I will even like go as far to, there's some sort of church that is, I think, a more Pentecostal, more spiritually led church, I think Latter-day Saints type of deal. The Latin culture gets really into that sort of thing, so there's a lot of different varieties of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had some family members who were going, and I joined them one Sunday, and this was years and years and years ago. But I went one Sunday by myself, and after the sermon, they said that their prophets would come and, like, lay hands on you.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you were going through something in your life.
Yep.
And I did it. And I had this lady come up, and she said things to me that were very... But before I finish the story, like, I also know that my aunt was studying to become a prophet. Like, it was a, like, there's a prophet class that you can take, that you can go learn the skills to do this thing. But I sobbed. I ugly cried in this church. Like, she said some things to me, and I uncontrollably, I don't cry, like, much. I feel like in recent years I've become more human, and I've cried more about things. For most of my life I've been really hard about stuff like that, just not really emotionally affected by things. But I cried. So I was snotting, like, disgusting, falling apart in this church just because this lady said a couple of words to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any explanation for that. I know that humans are really emotionally complex,
mm-hmm.
and are typically very easily manipulated if you know what you're doing.
And if there's a thing called cold reading that, like, psychics, quote, psychics do, where they get information by throwing out a very broad spectrum of information, then somebody gets it, and then they go,
you have a family member. Oh, my sister.
Exactly. So like
exactly. She said it was your sister. Yeah.
So it makes me wonder if like classes become prophets, more or less teach you how to notice, you know, like little hints here and there, you know.
That was my first thought when you said classes. I went to like magician classes, you know.
So I guess the next question would be how did you get out of that? How did, like, what was the journey from being in that to changing your mind or getting a new mindset?
Yeah.
Or do you still think that way?
And then also, I always like to add, like, I always want to know what the mind and heart of the person was at the time.
Okay.
You know, because I know plenty of people who grew up in church but never believed.
Oh, yeah.
But then I know other people that, like, no, they grew up in church, their heart was there, their mind was there, they wanted to become pastors or go do missions or whatever, you know? So how about you, Kurt? Where were you? Where are you at? Where is your heart?
Yeah. Did you believe what the things they were saying?
I mean, at the time, I was a kid, you know? Like, I was young. I guess, like, for a while, I was, like, really sucked up into it. It was just, you know, it was, like, our community. Like, my parents didn't really have, like, you know, like, friends outside of church, and everybody believed the same thing, you know? Like, those were literally, they didn't have, like, secular friends, you know? All of their life was based around, you know, the church. It was pretty normal to me, you know? It was all I really knew for a while. So I started meeting people in, like, other cultures and other, you know, like, you know, ways of life outside of that, you know, kind of reality. And, I don't know. It was mostly just normal to me. And it definitely affected me, the way we're talking about, like, groupthink and, like, those other, like, similar, like, sociological phenomena. I would definitely feel moved in church. I definitely felt that even as a kid, you know. And some people would argue, like, you know, kids are more easily moved, you know, in a spiritual sense, you know, at a younger age. I think I started to call bullshit on it when I was, getting to be, like, we pretty much moved from Charlotte. We've been moving all around Charlotte, you know, moving to different churches and different jobs and all that stuff, you know. Eventually we ended up, like, in Gaston County, and we kind of stopped, like, seeking out, like, these big churches to go to, and my sister, Sebastian's wife, Jenny, she kind of, like, found a home in this church right up the street from us. Like, we could literally walk there in, like, you know, 2 minutes.
Bob's familiar.
Huh?
That's where we met.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Tuxedo Boy, what's up, man?
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
We were talking the other night about how when I was younger, like, I was, like, you know, when we moved there, like, I was, like, right at that age that I was just, like, being rebellious and shit, you know? I was just, like, I don't know, I would go up there for potlucks, fill my plate up, and then walk back down to the house, sit down, play some video games.
Real good for food and family.
Yeah.
Feel.
The Southern Baptist.
Yeah.
You know, like, the typical things that you would expect.
Yeah.
The food was great. It was interesting there, though, that it like, theologically, they're pretty conservative, but then, like, the pastor preaches in shorts and t-shirts sometimes, you know, when they have pretty contemporary music.
Well, it's because you can reach more people that way.
Yeah.
You're more approachable. It's more, like, human.
I'm struggling to be real and to...
real
because,
and fake.
Because they listen. So, but a lot of people from there listen to this.
Well, I mean, but that's our experience.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to be real, but not trying to be, like,
I definitely don't want to be hateful, because I did feel loved while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But I will also say that for someone, like, I've been to the church and I've heard the sermons of, you know, if someone has fallen away, it is our duty to bring our brothers and sisters back into the cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were low-hanging fruit. Thank you. like 2 years now at least since we've left the church, and not one person has asked, hey, why?
Mm-hmm.
Not one person. And my thing is, like, if I was in that and I knew people that were very involved, not just like someone who goes on a Sunday, people who were involved, people who, you know, I was very involved with the praise band every Sunday, playing music like in front of the entire congregation.
You're part of the family.
Like I knew everybody. I was there helping everything. I left to go to seminary and then I came back, and everybody knew that, but nobody asked, why did you stop coming to church? And for me, it's like that either one says that you're scared to hear something you don't want to hear, or two, it was just not genuine to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that was easy. It's easy to say, oh yeah, let's come together and help these people. But how easy would it be to go to your friend, not just some stranger, not somebody you know in passing that would be awkward, your friend, someone who's like been in your life and helped you move your house and like come to, you know, help with anything in the community, your friend, and nobody came and said, what, like, what's going on? What's going on in your heart? Like, what's going through your head? Because that never happened. For me, I'm just like, how? And the thing is, it wasn't like something I wanted, because no amount of people coming and saying, hey, what's going on, is going to convince me to unbelieve the things that I've come to believe. But it would be nice to have a conversation.
The funny thing is, from that church, I think I was the only one that really, like, we stayed connected.
Yeah.
But I was probably the worst one to be connected with you, because I was the one that was like, yeah, I get it.
Because I have questions, and you're like, I have those same questions.
Exactly. I was like, oh, well, you should still come and we'll talk about this. And, you know, no, it was like, yep, I get it.
Question about that experience?
Sure.
You were, how involved were you, like, behind the scenes of the church?
I was there every Wednesday to help with youth group.
Okay.
I was leading small groups. So like I was putting together lessons to lead small groups in scripture.
Okay, yeah.
Teaching. And the thing was, we were the youngest couple in the church for a long time until Bob and Courtney came around.
Okay.
Courtney. I'm older.
Yeah, but we were still the youngest couple there, you know? So we really were attracted to, like, oh, new people who believe what we believe. Because it's really hard to find people as a young person who have similar beliefs in you in that situation. But I was leading life groups, which was like a community group. You'd meet up in somebody's house, you'd have a meal, and then you talk about scripture.
Okay.
And then discuss scripture and, like, how that leads us in our life. So I'm teaching all these people who are much older than me and have much more experience than me, but they wanted me to do it. They asked me to do it, and I did, because that's where I felt led at the time.
Right.
So, like, I was very involved in that community, in those circles. And then I leave, and the closest thing I've ever got was I happened to be at a social gathering that the church had, and somebody said, we got to get you back in these doors. And that's it. That's the most I'd ever got from anybody.
Wow, okay.
To, like, that was the strongest attempt.
One of the reasons I asked too is because you guys are really hitting on a different side of what I've been invited to churches. My grandma's not very, my grandma, and I was like kind of like gay, got a lot of my good natured attitude from her.
Did you kind
of
grow up with her?
No, I was raised by her for the first like 3 years of my life.
Okay.
And she lives in a quiet, like, stable household, but the house that I grew up in is not quiet and not stable.
Sure.
So my mom's like a gypsy. I describe her as a gypsy. She almost has like, he described his friend to have a Celtic, religion type of stuff. She believes in spirits and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
While she does believe in, like, the Christian ideology of monotheism, she's definitely, like, into this whole other realm of stuff that kind of got me to my beliefs. But I've never actually questioned like the spirituality behind things or the level of connection with what we might understand as universal goblet churches. What I've always questioned is, where does the money go? And the corruption of it. And like, you guys are hitting on so many more deeper levels than I ever, like, I never really questioned. It was like, apparently, I they must be believing in something at church. But what I always questioned was, well, where does the money go, though? And when I hear about, in current mainstream people, like, obviously we live in a time of way less Christians than ever. And I think the biggest, the skepticism I hear about, like, in my circle is, you know, they take all of our money and you have a pastor who is, you know,
doing awesome.
You know what I mean? And there's a business behind it.
Like, I'm trying to pay my bills.
Just last episode, we were talking about how you're raised to not ask where the money goes. You know, you're raised to be like, the idea is, it's your job, God's telling you to give the money to the church. After that, it's their responsibility to do what God says with the money.
Oh, man.
So you've done what you're supposed to do. Now,
like,
it's
God
asked
you
to
do something. This, the same way that, like, the way that I deal with my children sometimes in some things, like, I'll say, Mama, I need you to put on your shoes. And then she'll have a question for me, like, why do I need to get my shoes on? And she'll want to, like, have a full explanation of why and what and where and this and that. And I'm like, I asked you to put on your shoes.
Oh, wow.
Just put on your shoes. You know, we'll go. I'll take care of it.
Trust me.
Just trust me. You put on your shoes.
Okay, wow.
I'll take care of it.
That is, okay.
But, like, that's the mindset that you would be taught in church. I asked you for your money.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about where it goes. I'm taking care of that. You just need to tithe because I said so.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Man. Oh, that's deep right there. That when you say systems of control to me, I'm like,
yeah.
Because when I heard Kurt's stories before, I was like, that sounds kind of culty. But then what you're explaining to me about that system of control, that definitely is a new level. What I found crazy, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. My aunt and uncle were giving tithe. Oh, awesome, man. They were giving tithe, and they were paying the offering, but North Carolina was recording it on taxes. And I was like, that's how it goes? Like, geez, these people are insane. But I thought it was a non-profit for when you get to the church, so I just didn't understand that whole level of it and control. But when you say it like that, it's like, when people do ask about the money, it's don't worry. It's like, wow. And maybe that's why my grandma was never
interested. Or they kind of bullshit you about it. You know, well, it's going out into the community.
So, yeah.
Okay. What else? Yeah.
That was one of my, and we've talked about it before on the podcast, is like, I have a real issue with any system that claims to be leading people in some sort of, like, if I figured out, I joked about it one time that we'd figured out the whole universe and how to ascend. I was like, but if I did, I probably wouldn't be giving this information out for free.
There you go.
But if I did, I would be giving the information out for free, you know? Because that's the thing. That's the heart of it, you know? So anytime that an organization claims to have the truth but then wants to take your money, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I can't. I have trouble trusting that.
Have you ever heard that they say, like, demons are aliens or aliens are demons? Have you ever heard
that? Yeah, it was Scientology that did that, right?
Is that?
My mom used to say that.
Really?
Angels are just, we would talk about, like, supernatural stuff and, like, aliens and such. She'd be like, those are just angels.
That's some InfoWars shit right there.
But there's also theories that the Hindu gods are actually aliens. Is it Shiva that they talked about that would come and go as he pleased with his band of, like, dudes? But, like, he would come and hang out with people, and then, like, I don't know if he ever did conceive a child, but, like, it was difficult because no woman could ever hold his seed because he was a different species.
Yeah.
But then he would come and, like, share knowledge and share all this different information, but then he would come and go from the planet, and he was depicted with blue skin. And, like, there's some people that think he was actually an alien.
There's the movie Stargate. Remember that movie?
I've seen the movie. I think it was a show, wasn't it?
It was a movie first, and then they made it into a show.
Oh,
long story
short,
it's the Egyptian gods. And the pyramids were basically landing spots for the spaceships.
Oh,
and
the
gods were these aliens.
I used to love that. I remember that. And on another note, is like, if you can, like, you know, like, relate these stories, like, this story is the same as this story is the same as this story. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Wasn't that exactly what the main character's dad? What's that actor's name? I forget his name, but I love him.
Wasn't that the guy who did Dude, what's his name?
The one who did the one movie.
The Big Lebowski. Was it the same guy?
Is it Kurt Russell?
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kurt Russell. I love his roles. But anyways, yeah, same concept. Like, in that movie, he's like, oh, spoiler alert. yeah, he's like going around like the galaxy trying to impregnate different women until finally one takes it. And it's like a metahuman.
Yeah.
Yeah. But another, like, we were talking the other night of, like, you know, this story is the same as Jesus. This story is the same as Jesus. Like,
another archetype. The story of the story of Gilgamesh is...
Yes, Gilgamesh is Sumerian. Sumerian.
It's almost... It like, meets the same Jesus story.
For sure.
So many places.
And Krishna, too. The story of Krishna.
Yeah.
The Greek version is Dionysus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very interesting because Dionysus...
So we were talking about Hanuman last night is who we were talking about, who, like, is... born of a virgin, is chaste, is the perfect servant to God, lives in his entire existence.
There you go.
Like, yeah.
Even Joseph in the magical coat, or you know, Joseph, like he was in the Old Testament, had 12 brothers, sold for some silver, and those archetypes. But I do love the story of Jesus. That's the thing about it. Like, as somebody who's definitely came up with my own version of shit, right? The story of Jesus is not about, like, Jesus is the rebel, bro. Like, my favorite version of Jesus is Jesus the rebel. Like, screw this. Like, he's like a Wookiee, bro. Jesus the rebel Wookiee. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's going to the festival and he's going to tell you about the conscious. Like, yeah, I'm going to party with this with the bad people, but I'm trying to tell them the conscious. Like, I'm there, I'm hanging with them. They got my back now.
Because people argue so much about, is it true, is it factual and stuff. And, like,
in
arguing that, you lose the entire point of the story. You know, and like what it's the power and the goodness that can come from this story. Like Jonah and the whale, like, did that shit happen? I can't say 100% no, but I'm going to say no, you know. But the story can teach you so much stuff, you know.
But like, the boy who cried wolf. Who the fuck cares if that story happened or not?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm teaching my kids something. Yeah. Like, that's the valuable lessons
that
come from stories.
That story happened, bro. That story definitely happened, bro.
And then they argue about things, like, about if those things are real. When even in the New Testament, Jesus speaks in parables, you know, like, so many times. And there's parables, there's stories. They didn't actually happen. They're just meant to have a meaning. But then they're like, but no, the Old Testament happened for sure. It's like, dude, you're missing the...
So you're telling me there's two people that populated everything.
Yes.
There was a great joke the other day of a comedian. It was like, I'm so smart, I got things. If Adam and Eve were the first people, why do they have belly buttons?
What didn't Adam have that every man wishes they didn't? Mother-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
But
then you got Lilith, too, by the way.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah,
then there's a whole thing with Lilith.
So even things like with the aliens and all this. So, like, I'm a skeptic, so... Like that, like the whole aliens coming down, being gods and all that different stuff. Like, it makes sense, but to me, there's no proof. So it's like, I'm not gonna believe it until I.
No proof of anything.
Well, that's 100% true. But
see, Bob, I'll tell you there. I'm a skeptic too in that sense. Like, me and my girl were recently talking about evolution, and I was like, to this point, it's the best possible theory we have. In a lot of ways, I'm convinced. Microevolution, for sure. Macroevolution, like, I'm like 99.9999, but like, I'm still a skeptic, you know?
That's what science is. Science doesn't tell you the truth, it just tells you it's the way of explaining the observable universe. Mm-hmm. So,
it's the best we have at this time until we figure out some new shit.
And
the
true science
new evidence.
That's why nothing's fact. Like, the word fact is rarely ever used in science, it's all theory, capital T theory. Because, like, scientific theory is as close to fact as you can get. But because it's science, and the smart scientist will always say that it's not 100%. Like, it's always, up until this point, this is what we know.
Well, even scientific laws get adjusted to be able to explain certain things. Like, I think the speed of light was not a constant number. So we rounded it so that it would fit certain equations. But technically, if you were to, it's not a constant.
It's like gravity. We can't explain gravity.
Oh, well, gravity doesn't exist. The planet's flat. It's constantly moving up, right?
Do we agree that's probably the scariest thing about, like, the whole religious, like, control concept is that they, to a point, will make you disbelieve in what you know is, like, what you can prove yourself over many times observable.
Yeah.
That's a...
And once you've proven it to them, like, over and over and over, they're still like, no, it's because of this, it's because of it. Like, they just... There's a really good it's a mockumentary, but it's a true documentary called Beyond the Curve on Netflix. Have you seen it?
Well, I haven't seen it, but, you know, Courtney was talking about it the other day, because, like, she's, like, oh, she's a geologist, all her, like, friends are geologists, and it's, like, hilarious to them, because they're geologists, you know,
Well, they do. There's so many things in the, in this documentary that, like, I feel like the film crew went into it to make like an actual documentary about these flat earthers, but it was just so terrible that it ended up being a mockumentary, you know? Because they run these tests. They run these tests themselves. They spend thousands and thousands of dollars to run these tests to be like, if the earth is flat, it's going to say this. If it's round, it's going to say this. We know it's going to be flat, blah, blah. They run it, and it says the other thing. And they're like, oh, shit. Yeah.
Essentially, the concept is that you have individuals who have so long become part of this narrative that you can't convince them otherwise. Like, it's impossible to tear that part out of you, you know?
Right.
Like, if I were to come to you and be like, yo, JP, you're a female. You know, but you...
I knew it.
No, but I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not.
There
you're
you
like,
go.
No, but here's... Okay, here's the science, though. I can show you that you are. You're like, no.
Your penis is just backwards, man. Go ahead. You just have it backwards.
Exactly.
It's obvious. It's just the backwards
penis.
Yeah,
no, but like, I've spent my whole life being a man. I can't not be that.
Yeah, definitely.
But you can't separate yourself from this idea. So it's impossible to actually... have someone question what they already believe whenever you get that because they've tied their ego to their beliefs and there's no
sure.
separating the two.
So there's this more recent finding in brain science that when you're younger, which, like, you know, when you're like 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, your brain, you're like, you suck up, you absorb so much information, you know, you're like a sponge. But then, like, when you're older, so it's called brain plasticity.
Mm-hmm.
When you're old, because your brain's plastic, it's moldy, and you can move it, or you know, it's all that stuff. Then as you get older,
moldy brain,
mold me.
It becomes, it goes into, I think it's called concrete, like, or, but basically your brain,
hard brain,
your brain hardens in a certain way, and that's when, like, so whatever you're being taught in those early ages, your brain solidifies.
Whoa,
in that,
I did
in
not
that
know that.
Way. Yeah, and so there's certain things like,
it's like an egg cooking.
Yeah, like there's things like meditation. And contemplation that can help get your mind to be more plastic again, to be more
mobile. Oh, like when they say loosen, you like loosen up, like those little like things we monikers we say, like loosen up your brain.
Because so in the solid state brain, when somebody says, like, you know, you're a woman, like, no, fuck you, man, I'm not, blah blah blah. In a more plastic contemplative mind, they'll say, you're a woman, and you go,
parts of me, yes.
Let me think about that. You know, it's not a reactionary, it's contemplative versus reactionary.
Well, wow. So what was interesting was you were saying that and I was thinking in my mind, what if then you were able to convince a child that something truly existed? You know, like whether it was
a god.
Well, so that's where it ended up.
Yeah.
But if you could convince a child that the Easter Bunny or the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus or, you know, whatever is real beyond the point of plasticity, but that's religion, right? Like, if you can convince someone long enough,
well,
then it becomes hardened.
That's why it's a social construct. Like, God is a social construct because we've, as you're growing up, these religious industries, like, they shove this idea of what they know of God, like this God that they've created in their own image, down these kids' throats, and then the kids grow up believing that this created social construct is the thing that's sitting up there judging them, watching over them.
It's so important too. I recently read a book called The Origin of Political Order, and I didn't realize how important, like, the aspect of religion and God was tied into the creation of our society today.
Oh, absolutely.
It was only at the point where we started believing in a higher power and you had to care about your ancestors in the afterlife.
Yep.
Therefore, you needed somewhere to put your ancestors. Therefore, you needed your own land. Therefore, you wanted to pass your land to your... And this creates an entire, like, society based on... what do we call that? the farming point of life. Yeah, there's a period of life. Feudalism creates feudalism, and with feudalism comes kingships, and then comes on.
I went to a festival, a Wild Goose Festival up in Asheville. One of the, I think, two episodes ago, it was about this. But one of the things they talked about is how pre-feudalism, pre-agriculture and farming and stuff, that the world was like tons of animals, tons of, you know, everything. Everything was everything we needed. And like tribes were more egalitarian, more, you know, women and men were pretty much along the same level. That was totally, but you know, more egalitarian.
Yeah.
But then once they learned how to farm and to plant things and it would grow, then land became worth something.
Yes.
And then when you had that land, somebody had to own that land. And then when somebody owned that land, they had to protect that land. And then, you know, you can live on my land, but you have to pay me so many ears of corn a day, you know, and that's how
on some of money.
Because the concept of like owning something is
right.
Like if you want to take a step back and just think,
there's your ego right there.
Yeah, how do I own something on the planet? The planet was here before me. It'll be here after me. But somehow I own this. Yeah. It is mine. No, it's not. I still have to pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
So it's not even mine anyway. It's the government's.
Yeah. The Native Americans, some tribes have this ideal that you cannot own the land. The land is gifted to you. It is a gift. And so, because it's a gift, it's your job to care for it for the next generation or whoever owns it next. So not to, you know, not to fuck it up like we are right now.
Yeah.
So you mean not kill all the coral reefs and
stuff? Yeah. Okay, so like a few years back in North Carolina, like fracking was like a pretty big deal that was coming to North Carolina. There's like a lot of debate over, you know, whether we should be doing it here or not. And I was in an environmental biology class at the time. I had a really like staunch, like, you know, fuck this shit kind of professor. It was like, you guys get extra credit if you come to this like town debate, where they basically came in and told us, we passed these laws that we're going to frack in the mountains. There's nothing you can do about it. But it was a public forum, so we got to go out and like, you know, say, fuck y'all. You know, we don't want it, you know, like after the fact. Who got up there, and there was actually a lot of really cool scientists from the community, and like, you know, just like really educated people who got up there, and yeah, we're like, you know, this isn't right, this isn't what we want, you know. And it's just not good, you know. It's just one guy actually got up there, and I thought it was really cool because he used the Bible to defend like, you know, or not to defend, or basically he used the Bible, he was quoting from the Bible to say, like, we are like trusted as stewards of the land, you know, we're like given dominion over the animals and plants and all that stuff. And he was like, but that's not to be taken lightly, like we are literally given dominion over them to protect them and all that stuff. And I thought it was one of the few times that I've heard an environmental stance come out of, like, you know, out of a religious, like, you know, like scripture thing. I was like, that's incredible, you know. Like, I don't know, I was really impressed. Yeah, I was like, it's awesome.
So, Kurt, you were saying that you were at that church.
Which one?
That one.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, from there, where does the story lead?
Well, yeah, I just remember I was, like, rebellious at the time. Like I said, I was, like, maybe, like, 12, coming on 13, something like that. So I was pretty rebellious and just rebelling against all these ideals in general. But, yeah, finally, one time, I remember we all went out to McDonald's for some, like, function, I don't know, you know, me and Jenny were, like, eating McDonald's with the whole church group, and I don't know, you just get in the mood when you're, like, you know, that age, like, you know, becoming a teenager and all that stuff, and you start to, like, you know, look around you, question things. And I remember just very strongly one day thinking, fuck this shit. Like, I could be doing anything, but I'm here, and I'm, like, eating up you know, what they're telling me, I'm like, you know what? I think, like, definitively right now, I'm going to decide that I don't believe this stuff, and there's no reason for me to. And I kind of just went with that after that. Like, I was just, I guess I decided at that moment, like, I was, like, 13, that I was an atheist. And then, like, you know, for the rest of my teenage years, I kind of just looked into other stuff. You know, I was in math class reading like, Eastern spiritualism and, like, reading up on Buddhism. I was reading up on, like, Hinduism. I found that stuff really interesting, but...
The amount of people that you pissed off by saying, like, praise Allah, it makes me laugh.
What?
So, like, because, like, in so many situations, I've seen you, like, either on Facebook or in, like, I've seen you say, like, praise Allah or something to that nature.
Yeah.
And, like, it's all the same. But people get really fucking mad.
I sort of remember
God.
I sort of remember that. And my reason was it literally means God.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought if it pisses people off,
it's
just
because
funny.
It's from a different culture. It means something different to them. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. But
it just means like the creator. It means like the greater thing that created us. And you know, just, I don't know.
And so it's interesting too that coming out of were you into like the wildlife conservation stuff even pre, like when you were still a Christian quote.
I did not actually know what I wanted to do until, like, you know, not when I was a Christian. At that point, actually, the last time I was a Christian, I was thinking about what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a teacher.
Yeah. So I always find it interesting when people, they lose or step out of, or for whatever reason, they get out of their religious tradition, and suddenly they seem to be more loving towards the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you, like, stepping out of that, and, you know, you obviously care about nature, you know, and the world and stuff. So
yeah.
That you don't need, you know, some giant sky wizard telling you that you're supposed to care for people and care for animals. You know, you just do it out of a natural.
Yeah.
We should love everything that lives.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say like I don't need that. And like in a lot of ways, that's what ultimately I came to. I mean, I think I was like loving as a Christian too. I'm not gonna negate that. Like it was.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it was. It was like more one way than the other, you know. But I'm picking up on what you put down though. Like, you know, ultimately, I was the person, you know, with these like ideals and motives, whatever, you know. Probably, you know, I was like they were instilled in me like through that culture that I grew up in. But you know, I don't know. That's still like I still attribute like the ideals that I have probably came from the culture that I was raised in. You know, culturally speaking, not necessarily like you know this stuff is like factual.
You have an experience as a young man being growing up in the church. You end up rejecting the idea of organized religion and forming your own thoughts on things. I know we've had a few conversations before about your journey into psychedelics and how that kind of formed your opinions on things now and it kind of opened up your mind. Would you mind giving us a brief, if you can, explanation of how that kind of affected your position now, and if you felt that was a really powerful and necessary growth, and then how you came about that.
Excuse me. Yeah, I don't mind talking about that. But like, I mean, honestly, I feel like it's kind of more helpful, like, to go to the next step, like, what happened after that, like, in the teenage years, just because it does provide kind of some context after that.
No, absolutely. You tell your story. We're just trying to...
No, I got you, man. But no, just for context, obviously after giving up the faith for, like, you know, a while, like, I don't think I was, like, I think I kind of picked it up again, like, started reading up on literature and becoming interested in it again when I was, like, around, like, 21, 22. For even more context, actually, I had a really crazy experience around that time period that, you know, that's when usually people get, like, pushed back into those things, you know? I think on the first podcast you talked about, like, you know, substance abuse and those things that you know, push you back in, like, you know, that realm, like, oh, obviously I need something if I'm not happy right now, you know?
Yeah.
I went through something personally traumatic, and, you know, like, I think this is a common experience for a lot of people, you know, they go through this, like, crazy thing, and not long after they find solace in religion, so I think that's essentially what happened with me. And what solidified with that was I was dating a girl who was really cool. We had a lot of, like, stuff in common. Like, we were both into, you know, like, the same kind of music. And, you know, more specifically, we had some similar experiences in psychedelics, you know. I, at the time, was no longer tripping. And she, at the time, was no longer tripping. We were kind of, like, over it, you know. But that kind of culture kind of shapes a lot of, like, you know, outlooks and stuff. Yeah, I just remember she was super fucking cool, man. And I guess she invited me to church, and, like, I was just like, you know what, yeah, you're pretty, you're cool, I'm going, you know. You know, anything to spend time with you, sure. And I was kind of into it for the community, too. Like, you know, I was looking for new friends and all that. But also going back to the that idea we were talking about earlier, you know, people saying, you know, triggering whatever it is to you, like, sob your freaking eyes out, and, like, all of a sudden you have this, like, very real emotional experience, no matter, maybe it wasn't that real, but it was real, you know, it was real to you.
For sure.
That's pretty much what happened, like, in this girl's arms one night. She said something, like, and I come to think of it, dude, like, it was, like, it was actually cut straight from Good Will Hunting. It was, like, that, like, Robin Williams is, like, holding, like, Matt Damon. He's, like, it's not your fault. Yeah, dude, like, straight up, and, like, one, like, I remember that night, like, just feeling the Holy Spirit come over me, you know, just, like, I'm just sitting there, like, all of, like, this pent-up emotion that I've been feeling for a while is, like, just, like, coming out, like, pouring out, like, a freaking waterfall, like, a raging river. And next thing I know, I've got, like, goosebumps going across, like, my arms. My laughing, or my crying starts to turn into laughing. I'm feeling something, like, extremely powerful. At the time, I'm thinking, like, dude, this is the Holy Spirit, you know? She's looking at me, she's holding me, and, like, you know, she feels it too. And it's, like, you know, it was a very real thing, you know? It was a very real thing that happened. I'm not going to deny that. You know, it was cool for a while. It was cool for a while, and so I realized, like, that was an emotional reaction, that was a physical reaction. I was able to make sense out of it years after, honestly.
I think that's one of the things that we've talked about it before, just that it's very easy to feel moved in a situation, and if you're in a religious context, be persuaded that that's what it is, you know.
Kind of already primed.
Instead of realizing that, no, we're super emotional beings, and our emotions can make us feel incredible things. Maybe that's not something outside of ourselves. Maybe that's just physical.
You can almost see that in some, like, even in Christianity, where it says, like, Jesus is in you.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Hinduism, it's like you are God. And, you know, well, Buddhism doesn't really have deities, but, like, all of it is, like, there's pieces and parts of it that are, but it's in you, you know, and it gets twisted.
Yeah.
Running with that, though, I don't know, I can tie that in, actually, like, completely with, after the breakup comes, you know, that was, like, when I started to, like, lose faith again. You know, I was starting to question things, like, maybe this wasn't right from the start, like, maybe other things weren't actually right. So I actually started to, because I had experimented with psychedelics before that, and had some pretty good times, like, some pretty trippy times, and, I mean, even, like, just, you know, like, personal growth times too. I used to even, like, read books and be like, you know, how can I, like, grow from this experience. Great book, How to Read Mushroom, or How to Eat Mushrooms Like a Shaman.
Oh, wow.
Reading mushrooms is pretty cool, too. But
it takes practice.
Yeah, seriously. But, yeah, so after the breakup, I didn't handle it so well, and I actually started to abuse psychedelics to the point that, like, I thought I was going to have this revelation that would set everything right again. Like, oh, enlightened now, or like, oh, like, I can push this thing behind me now and move forward. But it's psychedelics are, you know, a great tool, but you know it's got to be a tool in your hands. You know your hands are the ones getting using the tool.
I feel like the general takeaway that a majority of people who have tried, experimented with psychedelics is the oneness that you feel, and the feeling that you're compelled to do good for humanity, that we are all one and we should be taking care of each other as opposed to fighting each other and trying to destroy each other. Mm-hmm. You know, that loss of ego that allows you to be able to say, you know what, it doesn't fucking matter whether I'm right or wrong. It doesn't.
Constructs.
I to this day think that Gungor's meditation vapor is one of the more powerful things I've ever heard. But essentially it just talks about how, like, we are so fleeting, but we're so self-absorbed into this moment and our existence and our history and everything that we know and why we have to be right and everybody else has to be wrong and people should do it our way, because we know, when in the grand scheme of things, you are nothing. We are here for a moment and gone. If you put the universe on a timeline, it is vapor. And even if, like, it wasn't until like a couple months ago, but it was one of those, you could look at this and be really depressed about this, or you can see the freedom in it.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, eventually, everyone that you have ever known, everything that has ever been done on this planet will be gone. Will be sucked into a black hole, and it will no longer exist. And blasted out on the other side, in whatever form we will be, into a billion, trillion, whatever number exists that I can't count to, particles that will reform into something else. It will not matter. No matter what fight you won, no matter how hard you worked your whole life to attain whatever status, it doesn't matter. It's all going to be gone. So, while in this life, you know, why not do the things that are going to be good for what we have, as opposed to just struggle in the hate, because, like, that's the thing that makes it hard.
This episode of God is an Elephant was hosted by Bob and Sebastian, with music by myself and Christopher Molina. We'd like to thank Kurt for telling us his story and PJ for his input. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and follow on whatever platform you use for podcasting. Give us a 5-star rating and please review us on iTunes. Your contribution goes a long way towards getting us seen and heard. Until next time, Namaste.